White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 387.
In a time of conflict, he is a man of passion. His life is his trade and its riches.
It's all been weighed. There's a scale. If you wish to check the amount.
His challenge is Hong Kong and the battle to build a great merchant empire.
I'm going to show you destiny's gift to Taipan.
Hong Kong!
His love is Mei Mei, the devoted concubine who longs to be his wife.
After tonight, you remember for sure you did not want to lose Mei Mei.
Brian Brown, star of FX and Breaker Morant, is Taipan.
What Taipan is the Taipan?
Co-starring Joan Chen as Mei Mei. Taipan, based on James Clavell's best-selling novel. Bruce Williamson of Playboy calls Taipan flamboyant pop entertainment. I had a great time being bamboozled back to an era when men were men and women were waiting to reward the victor. Taipan, the love of his life, the adventure of a lifetime.
Hey everyone, this is Van. This episode is what we might call a lost episode of the White Rocket podcast. It's only a few months old and was recorded right before Jared and I sat down to talk about James Clavell's Noble House. For some reason, the Noble House episode got produced and posted, but we never got around to going back and posting the Taipan episode. So here it is, and is me looking at James Clavell's great novel and the movie they made from it, Taipan. So without further ado, let's get into it.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello! Welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with Patreon.com and all of our fine patrons on Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and what I want to talk about today, I'm starting a new series when I have some spare time to get these in. I'm going to be talking about James Clavell's Asian Saga, book by book, and video adaptation by video adaptation. So I thought about what order to do them in, and there's the order he wrote them in, which is one order. There's the order that they chronologically fall throughout history, because each one of his, I guess, six books is set at a different time in history, world history. But I'm not going to do either one of those, because I'm not going to do, at least right now, I'm not planning to do a whole episode on King Rat. And I'm not going to do Shogun yet. Because let me explain why I'm doing this now, and that will help, I think, help it make sense the order I'm doing them in. Okay. I noticed a few months ago that Audible.com now has at least most of them, if not all of them, on Audible. On new audiobooks, new editions, newly recorded, relatively new. And so I bought, and by the way, you get them for like one credit each on Audible, and that's a lot of value for your money, because these books are not short. These are among the longest novels ever written in the English language. So certainly Noble House, Gaijin, and Whirlwind are. These are 1,500 page long books. So I had just recently reread King Rat, which is set in 1945 in Changi Prison in Singapore. I had recently reread that one just a couple of years ago. So I wasn't in a hurry to and that's the first one that he wrote. Okay, that one comes first in the writing order. And I wasn't in a hurry to listen to that over again because I just reread it in book form. And there's a great movie, George Segal, really good movie. So I would like to talk about that one, the book and the movie, at some point, but not immediately. Because, again, I just reread it recently, and I wanted to revisit one I didn't remember as well. And Shogun is a similar thing. Shogun has the wonderful miniseries, and I've watched that relatively recently. A very well-done miniseries that NBC did in about 1980. I have the audiobook of Shogun, and at some point in the next few months, I'll probably listen to that. But the thing about Shogun and about King Rat initially is that they both exist. They're part of the Asian saga, but they really, the story that they contain, the story that each of them contains is contained within that book. You know, in other words, stuff that happens in Shogun, you don't need to have read Taipan or Noble House or King Rat. It's the whole Shogun story is in Shogun. Things that happen in King Rat, you don't need to have read anything else to get King Rat. Shogun, by the way, is the earliest one chronologically. So you could either start with King Rat and go the order he wrote them, or you can start with Shogun and go chronologically through the course of history. But again, I'm not doing either one of those because I'm starting with Taipan.
From James Clavell, the author of Shogun, comes the first major motion picture filmed in China. Taipan. From an old world.
God save the Queen!
To a new world.
No emperor has seen the guns of a British man of war.
He made China his world.
One Taipan is the Taipan.
But he broke the tradition of centuries and took a slave as his lady.
It's my pleasure, and it is my duty.
She's in a flux for you.
You do not want to lose my leg.
Absolutely lovesick.
My knee is your slave.
I will defend her to my death.
Meat. They make you very potent. Now.
Taipan, the birth of a dynasty.
Here's the original book I read back in 1991 that I picked up in the bookstore. And you can see it's still a pretty thick book if you're watching on the video. The mass market paperback of Taipan is 734 pages, which is about half the length of Noble House and Whirlwind. Here's the more recent trade paperback edition that I bought. It's just a more updated one. It is about 600 pages long. So I'm starting with it because I just recently listened to Taipan and then to Noble House on audio. So I'm, and I just recently watched Noble House video, and I just recently watched most of the Taipan movie from back in the 80s, which I'll talk a little bit about here too. Now, I'm going to do a show talking about Noble House, the book. But Jared Albrick and I will be doing a show coming up soon where we actually go through and talk about Noble House, the miniseries with Pierce Brosnan, because Jared's going to be watching that soon. Okay, so we're going to start with Taipan, and I'm just going to kind of do an analysis, a one-person discussion of Taipan, both the book, its place in the saga, Clavell himself, and the movie with Brian Brown, because I have very mixed feelings about that movie, which we'll get to in just a minute. Okay. So first, here's a little clip. I opened this randomly, and here's a little clip that gives you a sense of the movie Taipan, just to get you in the mood, because here is where a Chinese, one of the compradors or intermediaries is talking with Dirk Struan about their financial crisis. Dirk has to find several thousand pounds in sterling silver immediately, or he's going to be in deep trouble, and I'll explain in just a second. But here is Dirk and the Chinese businessman.
Everywhere today, I'm told Noble House must pay in silver. No credit. Unless Taipan produces a miracle, the ships will return without silk or tea.
But Taipan's cargo does not contain miracles today.
Okay, so that was fun. Maybe I'll find another one in a minute. But anyway, so here's the deal. A little background on these. James Clavell, British novelist, producer, director, screenwriter. He famously wrote The Great Escape and To Sir With Love. But when there was a writer's strike going on in Hollywood in the late 50s, I want to say, his wife convinced him to sit down and write a novel instead, and he wrote King Rat about, it's based loosely on his own experiences in Changi prison in World War II. And it did very well, and it became a movie. And then in the middle 60s, he wrote, and let me see, it came out in 1966. He wrote Taipan, and here's the significance of Taipan and why I really was excited to start with this one. Taipan is really the beginning of the Struan's saga. I mean, the Struan saga is the major component of Clavell's Asian saga, but Shogun and King Rat do not at all touch on Struan's or the Noble House. The other four books very heavily do, beginning with Taipan. So Clavell wrote Taipan and gave us this much bigger than life, amazing character named Dirk Struan. Dirk Struan is a China trader, meaning he's a Scottish sailor who, when he was younger, he was serving on a British ship with Tyler Brock. And Tyler Brock whipped him mercilessly when he was basically a cabin boy. And Struan vowed that someday he would whip Tyler Brock with a cat of nine tails to get revenge. Well, I don't believe he ever does that. But what Dirk Struan does do when he becomes a grown man is he founds a trading company that travels between Britain, India, the British holdings in India, and China, among other places. And he carves out a financial empire, a trading company, which is called Struan's, named after him, Dirk Struan. But it comes to be known by the nickname the Noble House because it is the greatest, most admired trading company in Asia. And the leader of each of the Hongs, or trading companies from Europe and America that are in China, in Canton, basically in Macau, originally, the leader of each of these is called a Taipan, at least in James Clavell's world. They're called Taipan, which means like supreme leader. So one of the Taipans is the Taipan, which to the Chinese means like the head European, the head foreigner, the head foreign devil. And Dirk Struan is considered the Taipan of Taipans. And from him forward, all of the Struan's Taipans, and there's 10 or 12 of them by the time you get to Noble House, there has been them, each of them is called Taipan. So when this book begins, and when the movie begins, Dirk Struan and his Noble House Struans dominate the China trade, but there are other companies, other Hongs as well, including Brock and Sons, that Tyler Brock, the guy that has this blood feud with Struan, right? He is the number two Taipan, Tyler Brock and his son Gorth, okay? So they are civil with each other for the most part in public, But behind the scenes, they desperately want to murder each other or destroy each other, bring each other's houses down, destroy each other. And that carries all the way on into Noble House. So when we talk about Noble House, we'll be talking about, I believe it's the 10th. Some have said it's the 12th. I think they maybe change it to 12th for the movie because the movie takes place in the 80s instead of the 60s. But I'm going to say the 10th. The Taipan in Noble House is Ian Dunross, who Pierce Brosnan played in the miniseries, and he is the 10th Taipan. So there were 8 Taipans in between Dirk Struan and Ian Dunross, who is a direct blood descendant of Dirk Struan, just through a woman, one of the women's side of the family, so it's Dunross instead of Struan. There's also Max Struans and Struans that are descended from Dirk's half-brother, Rob. Okay. So, all of this, by the way, is based on actual real history. The name was not Struan, the name was Jardine. And so Struans and Company, Struans is based on the Jardine Matheson Company of Hong Kong. And so if you go to Hong Kong today, you'll see a big skyscraper that stood in for Struan's headquarters in the miniseries Noble House, and it is the Jardine Matheson headquarters. So, where to go now? It's based on real people, but it's a totally made-up history with lots of colorful additions and embroidering by Clavell. Taipan the book, one more time I'll show you. Taipan the book begins in 1841 as Britain has defeated China in the Opium Wars, or at least one or two of the early Opium Wars, and has taken as part of their prize for victory Hong Kong Island itself, which at the time was a barren wasteland with only a small fishing village somewhere on it. It was in the story, again, we're going to diverge off of real history and just talk about how the story is presented. In the story, Dirk Struan is like the one British sailor merchant who can envision the tremendous value that controlling Hong Kong Island and to some degree, at least as importantly, the harbor, okay, will have in the future. The Chinese, lacking global reach at that time, didn't need a vast saltwater harbor, a blue water harbor. But what the Taipan realizes is that Hong Kong Harbor is so secure because you have like the coast of China, and then you have Hong Kong almost like a crescent moon with the points pointing back toward China. And the harbor in the middle there, in between the island and the coastline, is this area in there is the most secure deep water harbor on Earth. So that whenever one of the great storms, like appears at the end of Taipan, one of these great storms comes blowing in out of the Pacific Ocean, the mountains on Hong Kong Island deflect the storm for the most part away and keep those ships in the harbor safe. So, you know, the other traders don't understand why, when they had the opportunity to demand so much from the Chinese, you know, one of the main things they demanded was this little barren island. But Dirk understands that it is the future. It is the key. It is the doorway into China. And because it's an island, it's going to be even more secure from the Chinese. You know, they show, especially at the beginning of the movie version of Taipan, they show how every so often the Chinese, whether it be the people themselves spontaneously getting fired up, or whether it be the government riling them up to kind of force, you know, against the British and the Europeans and the Americans, every so often Canton, because Canton is on the mainland, Canton falls under attack. But Hong Kong is much safer because it's an island. So Hong Kong is just truly ideal for the Europeans and the Americans because on the one hand, it's a buffer that protects the harbor and protects the ships. And on the other hand, it's an island that protects the people from being attacked from the mainland. So it's just a really ideal location. Now, later on, as Hong Kong expands and grows way beyond that island, it's going to have to add on things like what's called First Kowloon and whatever is over on the other side there. And then it'll add on what are called the new territories going on up into mainland China. So the Hong Kong colony itself grows beyond just Victoria, which is like the Hong Kong island city in Happy Valley, to Kowloon and then to the new territories. And eventually it expands to include quite a bit of China there. It's, you know, right across the Pearl River, I believe, from Macau, which is the ancient Portuguese colony, which is really more about gambling and casinos and hotels. And it's Macau under the Portuguese is more of a Las Vegas, whereas Hong Kong under the British becomes more of almost a New York City of the 1800s, you know, with the great docks and shipping and transshipment ports and all that. Okay. So, the general plot of this book, I've given you the setup. Now, the general plot of the book is that we see a period of time where Dirk's control over the noble house and the noble house's position. I mean, it's all these are about maintaining the noble house's position as the noble house, right? They're all about his rivals trying to drag him down and him trying to work miracles, as you heard in that video clip, to stay atop the heap, so he can be the Taipan. Because enormous power comes with it. Now, what happens in Taipan is that I just did the entire audible of Noble House, and I can tell you why there's to a certain degree, I can tell you why there's economic problems, financial problems for Struans in 1963 when Noble House takes place. The economic problems that beset Struans in 1841... are more convoluted as well, but what it really comes down to cut to the chase here, what it really comes down to is Struans owes thousands of dollars or pounds sterling of silver, mostly to Brock. Brock has maneuvered it to where he holds the paper on a lot of their debt, and he's going to call that debt in and make Struan's default, and then he'll come in and take over and become the noble house. So that's what Dirk is fighting against for the most part. There's a whole lot of other things. There's romantic subplots with his sort of Asian concubine, Mei Mei, T'Chung, Mei Mei. But I've got to say there's two other things that really are important in the background of this story and really going through all of Clavel's work along this line. Two things. One is that Dirk Struan is an enlightened European because the people he works with in China know that he has potential, okay? Because they know, they recognize his potential and the need to have Europeans who understand China better so they can get along with each other better. Because we know, you know, the more enlightened on the European and the Chinese sides understand that what we need is to work together because there are other enemies out there. Now, let me say that brings me very quickly to the other main thing that runs through all of these Struan's books, and that is that the real enemy is always Russia. The Russians are the real enemy. So these are two intertwining themes that run through the Struan books. Number one, the Europeans think that the Chinese are the barbarians and the Europeans are civilized and there's a lot of scorn for the Chinese, whereas the Chinese and the Japanese also think that the Europeans and the Americans are the barbarians and that only the Asians are civilized and the Asians have scorn for the Europeans. So both sides think that their way of life, their kind of people, their culture, their society is the really civilized one, and the other one is barbarian, right? They both think that. And as Clavel lays it out in all these books, they're both completely right in some areas and completely wrong in some areas. And so one of the two major themes through these books is that Europeans and Asians have to work together. They have to learn that one does some things better and one does the other things better. And they have to come together to be, they're stronger together, right? That that both, you know, the Europeans, and I'm including the Americans, let's just go ahead and say, when I say the Europeans, I include the Americans in that. just in general, culturally wise, not racially, ethnically, whatever, just culturally wise, okay? When, you know, the Europeans are good at some things, the Asians are good at some things, the Europeans are weaker at some things, like in this book, taking baths. The Asians are more limited in some ways, and so when you bring them together, they are stronger, okay? And that's, again, that takes me to the second of the two major themes running through the Struan's books, which is that the real enemy to both China and the Europeans is Russia. In this book, it's the Russian Empire, the Tsar, and all that that implies. In Noble House and in Whirlwind, and you know, it is the Soviet Union. Although Clavell makes it very clear in Noble House that the Soviet communist agents in Noble House really do lip service. They pay lip service to communism, and they're really all about, honestly, they're all about, Mother Russia. They just think of the Soviet Union as a particularly handy way of promoting Russia. You know, they think of Lenin as basically another czar, pretty much like, just like the Chinese to some degree think of Mao as the latest emperor and the latest dynasty. Communism's the latest dynasty. Okay, so those are two big themes that run through the Struan's books, that the Russians are the real enemy and that Europeans and the Asians need to get together to team up against Russia. Now, the movie, let me say a couple of things about the movie. The movie was done by Dino De Laurentiis and that company back in the mid-80s, and it's 86, and it was directed by Daryl Duke, and it leaves out so much. It's, again, this is a shorter book. It's only, you know, like 800 pages, but that's a lot shorter than the other Clavell books other than King Rat, so it could have been a miniseries. It needed to be a miniseries. It either leaves out or makes, you know, things happen really quickly that would have been better played out in more complexity, the way that Noble House and Shogun are done. But that being said, what we do have of Taipan as a movie, I think, is wonderful. Is it too short? Way too short. Does it jump too much and leave things out too much? Absolutely. But what we do have, and particularly the cast and the scenery, the costumes, all that is just beautiful. In some ways, it kind of reminds me of 1984's Dune movie that David Lynch did. It's not horrible like David Lynch's Dune, but, you know, we and other shows we've talked about this. David Lynch's Dune looks wonderful. The money is up there on the screen. It has great costumes. It has great effects. It has great scenery. It has a great cast to a certain degree. You know, you just, when you look at David Lynch's Dune, you just wish that they'd had a better script. But again, they leave out a lot of stuff and they add a lot of stuff that's not in the great Frank Herbert novel. Well, it's almost exactly the same thing here. You've, as with that David Lynch Dune movie, you've changed a lot of stuff, you've left out a lot of stuff, but man, it looks beautiful. And the cast, I think Brian Brown and Joan Chen, Brian Brown to me is the definitive Dirk Struan. I think he's absolutely great in that role. And Joan Chen as May May, I think, is wonderful. I think she does a great job. John Stanton as Tyler Brock, he's not exactly the way we envision him in the book, but he makes a great villain. He chews the scenery just fine. And so, you know, those are the main three characters in this, and I think all of them are fine. Now, they leave out a lot of the Russian plot. You do see the Russian ambassador, Count Sergeyev or whatever, at some point, but only briefly in like one scene. He's much more important in the book. And the involvement with the Russians. You know, as far back as Taipan, we start to see the Taipan of the Noble House getting access to secret diplomatic documents that involve Russian nefarious plots. In this case, and I love this, in this case, it is to continue their ownership of Alaska and go all the way down the Pacific coast to Mexico and take over basically California, Washington, Oregon, Canada, and all that. And so, and they're planning to basically take over Canada using Cossacks and Asiatic Siberian Russian people. And so I really like that idea that the Russians were going to do that and the British have to stop them, and the Americans too, of course. And so you don't get that in the movie. You really just get a focus on Dirk trying to save the Noble House from Tyler Brock. So again, you know, if you don't care that it's a perfect adaptation, it's worth watching the movie version, the De Laurentiis movie version of Taipan once. Just focus on the performance of Brian Brown as Struan and the performance of John Stanton and Joan Chen. Joan Chen is beautiful in this movie. She plays Mei Mei exactly the way she's depicted in the book, which might be offensive to some people, and I understand that. This is a book that was written in the early 60s. There's a lot about it that I struggle with this. Some people would look at Taipan today and say this is offensive, it's stereotypical, it does terrible things for the Chinese, and it's awful. I totally understand that. On the other hand, please be aware that when this book was written in the early 60s, this was revolutionary. And it did positive things for China, for Asian characters, that nothing really had done before. Presenting them in a positive light, presenting them as industrious and at every bit the equal, if not the superior, the Europeans in most circumstances. And giving their perspective, right? Giving their point of view. Showing that the Chinese had a very legitimate point of view about how they viewed Europeans and that they could in some cases be just as bad as the Europeans and the Americans, you know. So in terms of their attitudes and racism and ethnic issues and all that. So you kind of have to take Clavell's stuff, warts and all, and understand that while in the 2010s and 20s, it's going to seem dated and maybe offensive. On the other hand, if you look at it from the perspective of its context of when it was written, it was revolutionarily positive for that time. And again, if you appreciate, if you go into it understanding that, yeah, today it could be better, but it's a product of its times, it really was revolutionary for those times. Okay. I think that's fair. And I want to be fair. I'm not trying to make some argument, you know, that it's better than it is. I'm just saying that for the time it was written, it absolutely was better at that time it was revolutionary. So a few more things about this story, and then I'll talk about kind of where it's all going. Throughout this story, what we really see are the ways in which the Taipan of the Noble House of Struan's, Dirk Struan, old Green-Eyed Devil, I forgot that's his other nickname, the Green-Eyed Devil, as the Chinese call him, we really see how he uses his brilliant problem-solving skills to get himself and Struan's and people he cares about and the British and Europeans and Americans in general in Asia out of bad situations. He's portrayed as a larger-than-life hero. He is then given hurdles to overcome that seem no human could overcome them, and he finds creative ways to do so. Let me mention one thing specifically, because it will play into everything that comes after it. When he has to be bailed out at one point by Jin Sha or Jin Kwa, depending on how you want to pronounce that. I've heard it pronounced both ways. He has to be bailed out by a Chinese businessman whose family will become very entwined with Struan's going forward in terms of offspring, heirs, branches of families. You know, that's another really interesting thing about this story is that in this story in Taipan, the Europeans and the Chinese are still mostly separate, with the exception of like Gordon Chin, who is Dirk's half Chinese, half European illegitimate son. He has a legitimate son named Cullum, who will become Cullum the Weak later. But he has a Chinese son who's much more capable, named Gordon Chin. And Gordon will, the Chin family, which is half European, half Struan, will go on to play an important role intertwined with the Europeans, the 100% European Struans, and those that are partly Chinese, partly European, the Eurasians, all the way up through to the present day as the story unfolds in later books. And they're really fascinating. How the House of Qin, for example, makes itself such a great and powerful family. And the Choys as well, Four Finger Wu and his son Paul Choi, who was later called Profitable Choi. So lots of people make out quite well. Dirk finds solutions. The one I want to mention, though, is that when Jin Sha sort of bails him out of a problem, he gives him money. He gives him a pretty high interest for the, you know, relatively speaking, to pay back. But he also demands one other thing of the Taipan and future Taipans. And that is, let me see if I can find, here it is. I wanted to get the cover of Noble House to show you. Jin Sha, I'm just going to go with Jin Sha, maybe Jin Kwa, however you want to say it. Jin Sha demands that they break four Chinese coins in half. And four of them are given to Dirk Struan to pass down to all the future Taipans until they're all four used up. I'll show you how they're used. The other four are secretly given to people that Jin Sha wanted to have leverage over Struans, the Noble House. So here is the cover of Noble House, and you can see that half coin. There's a reason why there's like a strap through half of it. Okay. So the idea is that Dirk has to swear on the Bible and give his holiest vow that any time somebody presents him with one of those four half coins and it matches one of the four halves that he has, Dirk has to, and any future Taipan after him, has to grant to the person who trades in that coin one favor. And it can be anything. And as later stories will show, it can be a very multi-part favor. Like, it's not just give me a ship. It can be like, give me a ship, take 20 of my men to Europe and train them to sail it, take four little boys to Europe and they will be brought up through the finest private schools and be raised as gentlemen. I want guns. I want training for the gunners. You know, it can just spiral on and on and on. Okay. So these are very convoluted favors. One of the coins is cashed in Taipan. One of the coins is cashed in off screen, so to speak, between books. And one of them is cashed in Noble House. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say that since it's on the cover of the book. That means that as of James Clavell passing away in 1994, there was still one of the four coins outstanding that had not been cashed in. So if you want to write your own Noble House Struan's fan fiction, there's still one of the coins out there that you can have somebody bring to Struan's, to the Taipan, and slap it down and say, one coin, one favor. And I believe so far all three that were cashed in by Chinese or Eurasians. They all apparently were given by Jin Sha to his relatives or his extended relatives like Wu Fang Choi or the Qin family or something like that. Okay, the second coin was cashed in off screen between Gai Jin and Noble House. I believe it was cashed in the early 1900s during the Chinese Civil War involving Dr. Sun Yat-sen. And the interesting thing about the coins being cashed in is that they're always cashed in for something that the Taipan would not want the noble house to do. Because if the Taipan wouldn't mind doing it, then why waste a coin on it, right? So the coins are always cashed in on a request, on a favor that that you're having to twist his arm to make him fulfill. To give you something he doesn't want you to have. To do something for you he really doesn't want you to do. Right? So, like for example, let's say, I'm just going to make one up. Let's say that you are a member of the Qin family and you have one. And you go to the Taipan and say, you know, Taipan, I want to start my own trading company to be a rival to you. I would like you to help me get that started. He would say, no, laddie, you know, no way. Why would I help a rival? So you could slap down your coin and say, I want you to give me office space in Hong Kong. I want you to talk to the board of directors of this, that, and the other and get me a space on the board, you know. I want you to have my little brothers trained in the finest business schools in London and in New York, you know, and so on and so forth. And that way he has to do it even though he doesn't want to, and it gives you a leg up. So that's how you would use one of those coins. Okay. Let's see if there's anything else I want to talk about Taipan. So just to kind of round out the story, the story of this book, there's some great set-piece action scenes. You know, there's a duel. There's lots of behind the scenes. One of the things that's a hallmark of all of Clavell's books, other than probably King Rat, which is a smaller story, more intimate story set in Changi Prison, specifically in the Struan's books, there are always lots of characters, lots of plots and subplots, lots of stuff going on. And you're following these multi-threaded plots and subplots as they weave around, and they all have in common that they come back to the Taipan. And so in this one, you get a great boat chase down, I think, the Pearl River between Struan and Brock. You get battles and attacks by the Chinese on the mainland at Canton. You get a lot of private stuff going on. The Taipan has to deal with, like, a British woman who wants to marry a British officer, but she has dark secrets in her life that only the Taipan knows about, and he has to try to help, you know. Lots of stuff like that going on. Okay, so that's Taipan. Where this goes in the future, without too many spoilers, is in the book, this is 1841 when this takes place. And by the way, I don't think it's any shock, if you know anything about the other books, that most of, not all, but most of Clavell's books end with some kind of a natural disaster. It's almost like his way of saying, you know, humans spend this much of the book setting up what's happening, and then God steps in the last act and just, you know, it's like if the book is a chessboard and Dirk Struan or Ian Dunross or whoever, they spend much of the story setting up the pieces just how they want them, and then God comes in with some kind of a natural disaster and just shakes up the board, bang, 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 you know. So it's almost as if to say that Joss, you know, fate and karma, those things take us places we didn't plan to go and don't want to go, but God has, Joss has, the gods have, you know, karma has other plans for us, whatever you want to call it. In fact, you know, now that I think about it, the end of King, and again, it's not much of a spoiler, the end of King Rat, the big natural disaster that shakes things up, is the end of World War II. I never really thought about it before, but, you know, you have this scenario of how things are playing out in the Japanese prison camp with the Americans, the British, the Australians, and others. And then, of course, near the end of the book, the war ends and everything gets shaken up and all the... It's basically a big event happens at the end of every story that changes the status quo and says, okay, Taipan, or okay, main protagonist, you know, you've very carefully done all these things. Now let's see how you react when the whole thing gets turned upside down. So that's pretty much how each of the stories ends in one way or another. A few years after 1841, we get Gaijin. Here, I'll show you. For those of you watching on the video, here's my original first printing of the hardcover of Gaijin. Another huge tome of a book. Running some, the hardcover is almost 1,100 pages. The paperback is like 1,400 or 1,500. And again, very briefly, where this is going. In Gaijin, we pick back up with the Struans family in the 1860s. The American Civil War is going on. Commodore Perry has opened up Japan to the Americans and Europeans, but the Japanese are not happy about that. And so this just picks up more plot threads of Struans and related characters in the 1860s. We learn a little bit more about what's been happening with the noble house in those 15, 20 years roughly since the previous book. Again, it ties into a real life event where some Europeans were attacked on the Tokaido Road, I believe, between Tokyo and where the port is, or Kyoto and where the port is. Yeah, okay. And the samurai are still running around doing stuff. But it's very close to the end of the samurai and the end of the shogun. Then the next one is Noble House, which I showed you a minute ago. Noble House is set in 1963. Now, the miniseries, which I thought was a pretty good idea, they just updated to when it was filmed, the 1980s. So the Noble House miniseries is set in the 1980s, and it that way they didn't have to use vintage automobiles and fashion and everything. They could just, you know, use contemporary stuff. It's a period piece now because I'm recording this in 2018, 30 years after the miniseries came out and was filmed in 1988. But at the time, it was updating it only 20 years, 25 years from 1963. So the book is set right before, in the weeks leading up to the John F. Kennedy assassination, which we don't get there in the book. The book ends before JFK is assassinated, but you can see the Vietnam War coming in the pages of Noble House. There's talk about that. You see a big nuclear aircraft carrier sail into Hong Kong Harbor, a United States ship, and there's a lot of a spying going on between a Soviet spy ship and the big U.S. aircraft carrier. There's double and triple agent spies running around Hong Kong. There's the British, the MI6, and SI, which is the Hong Kong Special Intelligence for dealing with spies. There's a whole lot of spy story going on. Okay, so there's all that, and you have Ian Dunross in the middle of it, as well as two American business people. And then in the 1980s, in the book, you get, let me get my hardcover. In the 1979, we pick up with Whirlwind, which is Clavell's humongous. Let's see, this hardcover is some almost 1,200 pages in hardcover. Whirlwind is, there is Clavell. Whirlwind is Clavell's story of British, Scottish, many of them Struan's employees. See, there's a moment in Noble House, and we'll talk about this with Jared, and we'll talk about this when we get into Noble House. There's a moment where Ian Dunross discovers that there may be oil reserves off the coast of Scotland in the North Sea, and so Struans jumps in to get into, especially into the helicopter business. Struan starts a helicopter subsidiary dealing with the oil rigs out in the North Sea. And they expand that so that by 1979, there are quite a few Struans helicopters and pilots in Iran when the Iranian Revolution, they overthrow the Shah, the Ayatollah Khomeini, all that happens. So Whirlwind is the story of these American and British, mostly there's a Finland pilot too, if I recall correctly, Iriki, these European-American helicopter pilots and their wives, many of them Iranian wives, so that makes it even more sticky, trying to get out of Iran ahead of the revolution and not be hostages like the Americans and in the embassy. Because the Whirlwind story takes place before the hostage crisis even begins. It ends before the hostage crisis even begins. Okay, so, and that's the most up-to-date recent thing we get about Struans is what we find out in Whirlwind, which is years after Ian Dunross has retired, and there's been a couple more taipans. So again, when we get into talking about Noble House, both the book and then the video, we'll dig really deeply into that. I honestly don't have a whole lot of detail other than that I want to go into in Taipan. This episode is mostly supposed to be about Taipan, but I just find myself wanting to talk as much about the whole universe that really this book established. In Noble House, Noble House is sort of what I call the Rosetta Stone of Struans, because in Noble House, it's the first book where Clavell tries to go back and say, here's how Shogun fits into this story. Here's how King Rat fits into this story. He doesn't do that here. Taipan really stands on its own when it was written, or it stood on its own when it was written. It's only tied in through its connection to Noble House and then to the later books. But I cannot recommend this book highly enough. It's a great introduction to Struans. You get to know there's no doubt that Dirk Struan is the giant of this entire series. He looms over everything. He's referred back to constantly in the other books, particularly in Noble House. And he is the giant. He's the founder. He is the Taipan of Taipans. And if you want just an amazing roller coaster ride of a story with these larger-than-life characters, his relationship with Mei Mei is fascinating. For example, the fact that she comes across as almost like a dutiful wife, but yet you really find out she's such a brilliant tactician and planner, and she was basically planted in Struans to be his mistress, his concubine, for the express purpose of civilizing him, quote-unquote, I'm doing air quotes, making him as much Chinese as he is European. And that's also a thread that runs through a lot of Clavell's stories, right? Shogun is about a British sailor who becomes a samurai, who comes to understand the Japanese and becomes as Japanese as he is European. Taipan is about a Scottish trader who becomes as much Chinese as he is European. And then in the case of Ian Dunross, you see that the Struan's family has become basically as Chinese. There's a great moment in Noble House where a Chinese character says something about, you know, we Chinese and you Europeans. And Ian Dunross, the Pierce Brosnan character, Ian Dunross says, I was born in China. My home is in China. I speak four Chinese languages or dialects. If I am not Chinese, what am I? He was even raised by a Chinese nanny, basically, an ama. He is as Chinese as he is European. And that's another theme, like I say, that runs through these books, is the Chinese learn to deal with the Europeans, and the Europeans become more Chinese. It really is a fascinating saga. I hope that you will take a chance on it. Like I say, read the book first. Don't watch the De Laurentiis movie with Brian Brown. It is great to see Brian Brown. He embodies the role. Joan Chen embodies Mei Mei. Mei Mei is wonderful. But go out, get this book, or probably you're more likely to get this book of it, and give it a read. Again, it's one of the shorter ones in the series, believe it or not. It's on Audible. The Audible version is wonderful. That was the last thing I was going to say. The Audible version is totally worth it. It's totally wonderful because the performer does all the voices, and he does them spectacularly. He does the accents. He does the different tones of voice. Listening to Taipan on Audible, the most recent version, it was you'll notice the year on it was very recent, is like, if you close your eyes, it's like watching a much better version of the movie. So the Rocket's going to get on out of here for another episode. I hope you'll check out Taipan. I hope you'll come back and join me down the road a little bit when we'll go into the next one, which will probably look at Noble House. All right, so I'll see you guys down the road a little bit when we talk about Noble House. By the way, let me, as always, mention our patrons. Our shows, this video, these videos, our podcasts, our books, everything is possible because of these people, and you can become one of them for as little as a dollar a month. And here are our current patrons, And for as little as a dollar a month, you can join their ranks and help keep our programs going and get all these other benefits that you can see at patreon.com. They include Brendan O'Dwyer, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, Carl Von Drunker, Phil Amthor, Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Johnny Caldwell, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, Theodore Gary, Shannon Butson, Taylor, David Hegler, Mickey B., Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vizhakana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris, Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, and our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. And again, go to www.plexico.net, P-L-E-X-I-C-O.net, or just go to patreon.com and search Plexico or White Rocket, and it'll come right up. And it's for as little as a dollar a month, you can help us keep going. You know, you can always find links to all of our shows, all our videos, all our audio, all our books, everything at www.plexico.net, P-L-E-X-I-C-O.net. All right, the Rocket's going to get on out of here for another week, and we will see you coming up shortly for our next installment of this. See you down the road.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.